Hello, and welcome to Season 8 of the Canadian Women's Foundation podcast, All Right, Now What? Gender equality and justice, where we live, work, learn, and play, is the goal, and it makes life better for everyone. All Right, Now What? Remains a space where we ask, how do we move from awareness to action? But this season, we're also shifting the story. Through powerful storytelling, expert interviews, and bold conversations, we'll explore what true equity can look like, especially for those who are too often silenced or overlooked. The work of the Canadian Women's Foundation and its partners takes place on traditional First Nations, Inuit, and Métis territories. We are grateful for the opportunity to meet and work on this land. However, we recognize that land acknowledgements are not enough. We need to pursue truth, reconciliation, decolonization, and allyship in an ongoing effort to make right with all our relations.
On today's episode, we're joined by Elia Lauzon from Nunavik, whose work and experiences reflect the power of community and intergenerational leadership. In this conversation, Elia speaks with Alyssa Carpenter from the Canadian Women's Foundation about growing up in a remote northern community and how youth leadership opportunities helped expand her sense of what was possible for her future. We'll also hear how the women and community leaders who came before her helped create pathways for the next generation, and why building stronger communities requires showing up for one another, sharing knowledge, and creating opportunities collectively.
Welcome, Elia. Can you start by sharing a bit about yourself and your community and what it means to you?
I'm Elia Lauzon from Gutjok, Nunavik. I am the middle kid of three girls. I never really know how to answer that. Gutjok is where I'm from, and I think that in an Indigenous context, that means something different than a settler context. Because when I tell an Indigenous person it's where I'm from, they can read into what that means. That's where my family lives. That's where I'm ancestrally from. That's where I grew up, what I know, where the land and I kind of know each other. But then in a settler context, do I explain that that's where my dad moved to? I don't know. I'm from Gutjok.
I love that. It's a very relatable answer as someone else who gets asked that often. There's two communities for me that are home to me, right? In different ways, but very much tied to my family and why they went there and why they created the community that exists today, like why they were part of that, what called them to home, and what kept them there, and how did they take care of one another to survive. For folks listening, that is Inuvik and Sax Harbor in the Western Arctic. Inuvik wasn't planned, but Sax Harbor is very much home to me. So super relatable. As a young Inuk woman stepping into leadership spaces, what has that journey looked like for you?
I didn't realize I was in leadership spaces until I was. I think it's different for a lot of people, but all the women who came before me made space for me in a place that wasn't made for me. You know, like they broke trails that I didn't even know were there until they told me, I wish I was there when I was your age. Like, it's so complicated to understand leadership spaces in this context because, like, for me, what is applying for a position that was available for them was like fighting to make it seen. Like, I'll never know the hardships of creating that space that I'm in. I'll only know the hardships of navigating it. But I've listened to a lot of women who are like, I fought for you to have that space and I'm so happy.
My mother would say similar things to me as well, or my grandmother's. They had to put on so much fight and deal with so much. And sometimes it's like still challenging, I think, for your generation and I to really be in those spaces and feel good about it when we're trying to navigate so much around our identity, our quality of life, who we want to be, what makes us who we are in that sense. Leadership is something that is intimidating in so many ways. But I'm someone who's like, I think from getting to know you, like forms of leadership is how I see it, how I've learned in my eyes backwards, kind of what you described, right? Is we were brought into these spaces that have been created and space made for us and encouraged. But it's something that is it's a feeling and a trust to find your way through that. I don't know. When I talk about leadership, I see it in so many ways. It's not just in a meeting. It's not just.
You know. It's not, but it's also so complicated to like express to the generations before who fought for these spaces that like I would never have had the capacity to do what they did. Like, I'm so grateful that they fought all the ways that they did that I get to sit and just be a confused young adult. And then like I had some women tell me like they would just come up and they'd ask like, so why are you here? I'm like, I don't know. I signed up for a thing and I'm here. And they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. What made you sign up? And they're trying to get to an answer of like something concrete. I'm like, I don't know. It was available to me and I chose to join. And then at the end of the conversation, they'd be like, I would have done anything to be your age and have that opportunity. And I'm so happy you're doing it. And it's like so humbling at the end of the conversation to be the whole journey in the conversation is me just feeling a little confused. I just did something. I'm just joining. And I'm like early 20s. And then they end it with like a, I would have done anything to be where you are.
It's a lot to carry when people respond like that to you, right? Because you're trying to unpack that and understand. It is coming honestly from a place of empathy, I think. It's very much that, because I'm just like, I wish everyone had the opportunities we've had. Like when I think of there's like key women in my region and then even in your region that who have made it possible, kind of like from a rights perspective, right? Like they fought for our rights as Inuit. They brought story, they brought context, and it's all about protecting language, protecting our land, protecting our community and our culture. And we're doing that as well by bringing awareness, but also reconnecting to that ourselves, because again, contact and disruption was very real and felt in our generation, right? And that's why I see also leadership is like, it's embracing that. And making space available to those and encouraging that and modeling it. Because I think what you're doing is you're modeling to those who are older than you and even within your peer group, right? Because sometimes it's intimidating. You don't feel like you belong or you deserve that to take those opportunities, especially around youth leadership. Like you're, compared to myself, you are a young person. So what is the importance of these opportunities for youth?
I find like I'm definitely speaking from the perspective of someone who grew up in a really isolated community. Like when I was a kid, we were a little bit under 2,000. Now we're a little bit under 3,000. And it's so weird. I'm 26. I started traveling like out of my community properly maybe at 18, and even then it was for like post-secondary education. It was to visit my sister who was in post-secondary. Like we don't have access to post-secondary institutions that aren't trades in Nunavik, so the only way I learned about outside of Nunavik is by leaving. And it was so weird to like, I always had access to TV, internet, and all those things to see the world, but it didn't build my imagination in the way that the opportunities did. Opportunity to visit a community in my region, opportunity to visit the Western Arctic, opportunity to learn from people who are in post-secondary. Like, I feel like, yeah, I could see things on TV, and I could see things online and I'd be like, oh, they have that because they're over there. they're not in Nunavik, they're not in Gutjok, they're not in this isolated fly-in community. And when I would leave, I would meet people like you who would create these opportunities. You're like, I've seen it somewhere else. I feel like I can make it happen where I live. I can make it happen at my neighbors. I don't know how, but I'm gonna make it happen. And it was the imagination building. It was so easy to look at opportunities where I lived and think like, okay, this is all that's available to me. But these youth leadership opportunities were so foundational to my imagination, to my ability to dream bigger than what I grew up in. Because when you grow up isolated, the only world that exists is the world that you live in. And then I saw more, and then it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it was like, how do I make that happen? And it was always, the answer was always collective. You need to be together to create more together, for more people to join, more things to happen. You need to do this in a community.
I remember going to some experiences that were for youth, but they weren't youth who really needed that opportunity. These are youth who have so much opportunity around them, in an urban context, in a southern context, right? Because I can't speak or relate to that. It's what you're framing from living in isolation is very real, because there's so many young people now and kids who don't get those opportunities. And the more of us who kind of expose folks to those places and different regions, I'm a huge believer that so many of our, from an Inuit perspective, our Inuit regions need to come together often and exchange, because those connections you make, seeing a similar community and similar challenges that we might face, or barriers, right? So we understand a bit of each other, but also kind of be reignited with the joy and the fire and the love that we see in our communities too. It helps to see it in other places, so you're not feeling alone, because I know isolation does that to so many people. No, it's very hard to navigate. And even from folks who are listening who are curious about that, right? It's something that I know from sharing space with youth like yourself, that it's also why we try to stay connected to our community and go home when you've had that, and you try to create it for others, because it was impactful for you. A light went off for you. An idea went off for you. That's how I got involved and focused on kind of youth leadership spaces and opportunity and just connection. Because I had a lot of experiences of some that were not as great or as exciting. And then there was a handful that were like, wow, how do we have this at home? And it's possible, but it takes a lot of work. Specifically, what kinds of barriers do you think young people in your region face from accessing opportunities? You've already said that it's an isolation that we have, but what are some other challenges and barriers that you see?
So Nunavik is 14 communities, and not one community is connected by road. All of us are fly-in. All of us are either, if you want to get there seasonally, you might need a boat and you might need a snowmobile, but you're probably going to take a plane. So the biggest barrier is access to our communities. But then I think outside of that is Nunavik is primarily Inuktitut speaking still. Changing with the new generation, depending on community, because we still have a lot of kids who are entering the foster system, so it's complicated. But you see a lot of kids who want to travel, who want to go to these things, but then we have so few organizations who are able to provide opportunity, and for them to access funding is so difficult, because they might have already accessed the two major funders in the region, but it's as if like the criteria to receive funding is almost copy-paste from a system in the South with small things tweaked here and there. But then it's like you're incentivized to always start an initiative, but almost not incentivized to maintain an initiative. So like you can start a new program and they'll pour funding into it, but the program that's been running for 2 decades that has proven to create like real opportunity for youth, whether that's post-secondary, whether that's to see their friends in other communities, whether that's just to have a suicide prevention activity, like it's almost as if they're disincentivized to maintain, which is a huge reason why like most programs everywhere are kept going and supported because one person believes it needs to be there. And it's going to keep going because that one person is keeping it going. But how often does that one person need to fight with the same people to get the same money that they got last year and the year before? And how long do they have the capacity to keep fighting before they're like, you know what? I love this program. I love this region. I love these kids. I don't have it anymore. And then they let it go. And then now maybe there's more money in the pot because there's not that program, but then all those kids who have all these barriers to access have lost one of the people that they don't even realize is fighting in their favor. It's usually like whether it's flights or funding, those are the biggest things.
No, travel's huge in those regions that have isolation. My region is lucky to have, it's blended in that it has ice roads and a highway, with only a few that are only isolated by plane access. It's super challenging. And what you described is very true. There's a new opportunity that folks want to give resources to, and long-term and sustainability isn't really a factor because, again, when governments or groups invest and are excited, they're like, okay, great, it's enough to get the ball rolling and attract other groups that are also struggling financially. It's super hard, but there are community grassroots initiatives that I've seen, that I'm part of, that it's the heart that keeps it going. And but it's more awareness and education, and just to work together, because I find sometimes too there's groups that for whatever reason have a hard time coming together and working through differences, going through conflict in community. That's what I see as a barrier too. Sometimes it's ourselves and it's our community members, because lateral violence is really hard to work through. Even when you look up to people and want to be and share space with them, sometimes they have things that they need to work on how they converse, how they support, how they work together. And are they ready to do that work as well without, closing doors on new people?
Lateral violence in our communities is, I think it's so complicated because you can see where it's coming from. It's usually from like a rooted colonialism, like this idea that they're either, this one you see a lot nowadays is like, I'm more Inuk than you, or I'm more connected than you, I know more than you. And it's this idea of like, if we put each other down, it'll bring us up. I've never understood that. It's like, odds are you do a DNA test, that's your cousin. Like, what are you doing?
You know? No, it's very real. But it's something I see, like it's my mother's generation. Mom, I love you, but y'all sometimes can be really mean to some of us, and it's mean. Just mean. It's something that some of us are trying to find courage and navigate. And it's not that we're overly sensitive, it's just that we're more aware because you helped us be that, right? You created that space for us, you raised us. Some of us might have had to raise ourselves for whatever reason, but it's something where we're helping give voice to that, and we're saying, hey, like, look at your behavior, look at your tone, look at your response, like, look at how you're behaving with other people, like, it doesn't feel good. And it's something, yeah.
I know that, like, if we grew up in those generations, we would understand it more, but I still don't get it.
It's very hard. And there's not many folks, because I think it's something that a lot of us have to have that hard conversation with people. And it's not a one-time conversation. It's going to take many efforts to just understand where they're coming from and make space to understand where we're coming from. Those are spaces that I think that are also lacking. We see intergenerational spaces around celebrating culture and community and coming together for milestones in our community or times of loss, but it's the unpacking that isn't solely focused on like I see treatment and addiction as a place that where I see intergenerational spaces created for that, but in a general community context, people are afraid to. I don't know. It's hard to do that.
I think too, like, you see a lot of youth instead of trying to, I feel like you and I might be lumped into a group of people who tried to understand the generation before us so that way we can continue to connect with them. A lot of youth don't have that capacity. They disengage. They're like, you hurt me. I don't want to be hurt anymore. I can't talk to you. And I think, like, it's not one or the other. There is so much nuance in between. But I think you and I fall a lot more in the, I want to understand you because I love you. But there's a lot of people who are like, I love you. I don't care why you did it. You still did it to me.
Yeah, there's a big spectrum and there's a lot of gray area. And it is a challenge that we're going through. Yeah, with some youth I work with in their younger 20s, they really dissociate and check out. And I'm like, I'm trying to be direct and I'm trying to meet them where they are. Because I always say, I was like, I needed that. I didn't quite get it. And I'm trying to create that space. But a lot of them, because of their prior environments, right, their upbringing, and they show that. And I'm trying to be like, I see it. It's okay. Like, how you're reacting isn't or something wrong. It's just you're protecting yourself for what you can and cannot do. And I want to say, like, it's you can work through it, but I can't do that for you. I can just create the space and encouragement for you.
I find, though, like, it might be part of the difficulty of being very empathetic towards many people, but it's almost like when I would get through something, I could see how hard it was, but then when I was through it, it was done. And maybe this is, like, a trap that we might fall into, especially with the youth that we connect with, that, like, we've done it so we can look back at it. It's behind us almost. But for a lot of these youth, they don't even know what forward looks like yet. They can't plan a week in advance because they've been in survival for so long. And now you and I are in these spaces where we're planning multi-year things. Yes. It's a very different world. When you can't plan tomorrow's lunch, how can you see yourself getting through generational trauma to try to heal others?
I see it from working with kids. When you kind of can read body language and understand communication, just from getting like some rapport with kids that show up to spaces continuously, you see it as well in this work. Anyone who has frontline experience can attest to what they see. And again, if they come from a place of empathy and care and strength-based, human-centered approaches, like all these things within social work, that's my degree. That's where, but I blended it with upbringing, right? Because I was like, what I was taught from a Western concept doesn't really fit. Got to mold it. We're still molding it. But it's a very real barrier. Yeah, we can talk about the system ones like funding and whatnot, but we see this kids because honestly, you know who it is? It's my cousins. It's my friends' kids. If but like I have a couple of friends who were parents early in their life, right? And it's something where I'm like, I wasn't a parent as early as a lot of my other friends I went to high school with. Like, and they see that too, that I've had a lot of opportunity. And I was like, well, I wanted to put myself out there. I was told to try and see things outside of my community. And that's a big privilege to recognize that that there's entitlement to that. And how do I navigate that with my ego is super important as you go home. And bring that back and encourage folks to take on things if it doesn't present it to yourself.
I feel like I talk to a lot of kids who don't realize how much of a privilege it is to have the space to be a kid. Like, I saw a lot of I was like 8 years old being babysat by my 17-year-old cousin who had a baby. Like, that was a very normal world for me. But as I was getting older, she was the one who, of every single person, was telling me repeatedly, you cannot have a baby, you cannot have a baby. And I feel like this happens a lot, is like women who see and have experienced the hardship are the ones who are ringing the alarm bell for all the girls after them. Because, like, as unfortunate as it is in our communities, like, men are much more free to walk away from family and obligation. Women are, like, so often the center of life, and it's always being taken from them. And all of the women that I've come across who want other women to succeed, want other women to have opportunity, are the first ones to tell them, hold your freedom for as long as you can.
Thank you for helping shift the story on safety, leadership, justice, power, and rights. You can visit CanadianWomen.org today to learn more and stay connected. We believe everyone should be able to exist without fear of harassment or abuse. You can help make that a reality. Text SAFE, S-A-F-E, to 20222 to give $10 and support women, girls, and gender diverse people throughout Canada. Small actions can lead to big changes. We appreciate your support.